You're on the Plants Grow Here podcast. I'm Daniel Fuller. Come along with me as we enter a hidden world of deep horticultural, ecological, and landscape gardening knowledge with featured experts, industry professionals, and enthusiasts.
It's a beautiful thing to buy plants. They're good for our mental health, they're good for the ecology, and they sequester carbon out of the atmosphere. But there's a problem in the nursery industry that most of us don't want to face, and that's the plastic pot problem. How can we call ourselves a green industry when we continue to churn them out, knowing that so many of them are ending up in landfill? And worse. This episode is sponsored by Hort Journal Australia, and the magazine's editor Karen Smith and I interview one of their writers, Bruce Thompson, who's a horticulturist that works in waste management. We explore whether recycling plastic pots is as simple as putting them in the yellow wheelie bin, what alternatives to plastic there are out there, and the possibility of standards that could address the issue. G'day guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
This is going to be fun. So first of all, Bruce, I'd like to ask you, what is plastic made from?
Okay, so plastic is made from a number of different things, but predominantly it's made from fossil fuels, so crude oil and natural gas. It's a derivative of both of those two. There are other things in it. There's cellulose, there's coal, but predominantly, you know, crude oil and natural gas. So a little bit of salt, but I think it's something like about 99% of plastic is made from fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. So you've got obviously different types of plastics. So in the recycling world, we have the seven types of plastic that you'd know from the symbols at the bottom. So they range from PET, which is polyethylene terephthalate, through to HDPE, high-density polyethylene, PVC, low-density polyethylene, polypropylene, polystyrene, and it goes on and on. So in the plastics industry, you're talking a lot about what's called mixed plastics. And that's pretty much everything apart from the first two I mentioned, which is PET and HDPE. And that's causing some issues at the moment around the world.
Right. So it's created from basically fossil fuels. So that's got a lot of carbon in it. What's the carbon output when you're making these plastics?
Well, it's obviously pretty high. I mean, as an example, in China, when they stopped the importation of plastic bags or the creation of plastic bags. So the amount of crude oil that was going in to make their plastic bags was something like 147 million barrels of crude oil.
Wow.
So it is predominantly crude oil that is going into plastic. So it's a derivative of it. But, you know, in terms of the global crude oil market, plastic is one of the big consumers. So it's obviously not just going into, you know, cars and wherever else oil goes into. It's plastic that's really been driving the economy of oil.
It's incredible.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's obviously very bad for the planet, you know, in terms of its extraction as crude oil, and then also in terms of the emission process of when plastic's being made. So those factories, you know, predominantly in China, where plastic comes from, you know, as a manufactured item, is very bad for the planet in terms of the emissions that are coming from those factories. We talk about, you know, the emissions from cars and coal fire stations, but I mean, really, if we look at the manufacturing processes of plastic, it's extremely harmful.
Scary.
Very scary. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, in terms of how we sequester, I guess, plastic, that's really a bigger issue for me than the sequestration of carbon, because plastic seems to be just as harmful, if not more harmful, than what carbon is for the planet. It is currently taking life forms. To a certain extent, people will say that carbon emissions are a future travesty, whereas plastic is a current travesty. Mm. So plastic is already killing us. Mm. And until we actually do something to reduce the amount of plastic on the planet, it's going to continue to have dire effects. Mm. Plastic is in the salt that we put on our food. You know, the microplastics are already there. If you have sea salt, then you're already having microplastics in your diet. Microplastics are now in the air that we breathe. So for me, as a horticulturalist, I became increasingly concerned about how plastics were getting into our environment and causing, you know, I think untold damage in terms of our ecosystems. which has moved me into the waste industry as a horticulturalist.
They need you, Bruce, because you have a good understanding of it. Like, a lot of people really don't understand. We see things on the TV, but we really don't have a good understanding of it.
No, I mean, I think what people don't understand is that plastic is, you know, it's ubiquitous, it's utilitarian. You come across so many items of plastic every day that you take it for granted.
Mm.
But it's almost what I would say an upstairs, downstairs thing with plastic is that, you know, you're going to the shopping centre, you're getting something, it's plastic in whatever form it might be. You take it home, you use it, goes into a bin. Well, just because it goes into a bin doesn't mean it's come to the end of its cycle. It goes to landfill. It will hopefully be sequestered as landfill along the way. It might fly out of a truck. You know, it might fly out of somewhere else and end up in the ocean. And when you consider that about 80% of plastic that's in the ocean has come from the land and the rest is marine debris, then it means that we're not capturing our plastic very well. We're not keeping it on land. And that is the big problem for the world. You know, in terms of the huge amounts of plastic that are currently in the ocean, when you look at concepts such as, you know, the giant continent that is forming, the Pacific plastic heap, you know, you've actually got two types of it. You've got one that's at the eastern side of the Pacific and one that's in the west. So the western garbage patch and the eastern garbage patch. It covers an area of 20 million square kilometres. And the amount of debris is so immense that, you know, on the bottom of the sea, they believe that microplastics alone, you're looking at 14.4 million tonnes of microplastics. So we need to do something to remove these plastics from our planet because we're not able to contain them any longer. China, as a manufacturer of most of these plastics, gave 5 years' notice to the Western world that they would stop re-importing those plastics to be recycled and go back into more plastics. And it was the national sword policy. And the Western world has responded very badly to that. We have just started stockpiling all our plastics, trying to figure out what we're going to do with them. And, of course, there hasn't been enough leadership from government to determine how we would sequester those plastics and reconstitute them as other plastics. But we really need to now consider when the biggest ocean on our planet is becoming a garbage patch, new ways of addressing plastic and eliminating them, not really just recycling and reusing, but pure elimination because of the issues they're concerning.
And when we're talking about plastic pots in horticulture, it's not as simple as just throwing them in the yellow bin, is it?
No. So if you're in a major urban centre, so if you're in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, there is potential to recycle them. So you're looking at the programs that have come through GreenLife in terms of plastic being a number 5 polypropylene, which can be recycled. So they can be cut, they can be shredded, and then melted down to create more plastic pots, okay? And that's great. So it's great that there are those initiatives in place for that to occur. So GreenLife Industry, since 2011, has been really looking at ways to make garden pots more sustainably workable, I guess, as a resource. So they get cut down usually into a bulk bag of raw granular material. Then that goes through an injection molding process and that becomes more pots. But if you're in a regional part of Australia, then the logistics of getting those pots to market to be shredded and then injection molded into more garden pots is not economically viable. So a lot of people just end up throwing them in landfill. A lot of people believe because they've got the number 5 on them that they're going to be recycled. But the whole issue is what we call functional recyclability. So for me, as an example, like I work and live in Mackay. And in Mackay, our garden pots go to landfill. They have to just get reused and reused by the nurseries here until they come to the end of their life because there's no market for what's called the recyclate. So recyclate is anything that has come from a process of a recycled commodity being broken down. So it might be glass or aluminium. So with aluminium, say aluminium cans that are coming through the, you know, in Queensland, the Containers for Change scheme, your aluminium might become an aluminium bike. You know, your glass can be reused and sequestered in roads. But plastic is a different commodity because there's so much plastic. The big issue is, what are we going to do with it? And so with garden pots, unless you're in one of the major urban centres, it's going to become a really big issue for you in terms of how you get rid of this plastic. So the question that I'm asking is it now time for the horticulture industry in Australia to think differently with regards to our use of plastics and start to embrace natural substances, things like, you know, latex coir, you know, maybe even terracotta. But we have to put research into ways to reuse our natural fibres, because plastic, first of all, is going to get very, very expensive as we get less and less crude oil. And because there's so much of it, there is going to have to be at some point like a United Nations force against plastic because of what it's doing to the planet.
Yeah.
It is threatening our food supply. So we have to put research into reusing fibres that we're currently not using. And I think that the work that's been done by Magic Soils with regards to the latex coir pots really needs to be emphasised by the horticulture community and embraced as a new way of thinking.
Absolutely. Now, Karen, I want to ask your thoughts in a second, but first of all, Bruce, can you tell me about those alternatives that you're talking about there? Like, what are the different options available, and what are their benefits and their downsides?
Well, I mean, the honest truth is there aren't a lot of options available. So, as I said, you know, the supplier that I know about, Magic Soils, which is using the latex coir pots, really it's just coconut coir that's been molded. Okay, and you can get them as grower tubes, you can get them as a sort of like 100 mil type pot, probably a little bit smaller, but it's square. You know, it's not what I would say the most functional design for anything other than the forestry tubes or grower tubes. And it's because it's market driven. Because only a few nurseries have actually embraced the coir pots, there isn't really a market. But there's also other issues that need to be considered. And one of them is, you know, if you're a wholesale nursery as opposed to a retail nursery. So if you're supplying plants to somewhere like Bunnings, the question would be, if you're using a coir pot, how long will its shelf life be at Bunnings? So really, the industry needs to change, because you could create something else to put that coir pot in temporarily. So just say it was terracotta, because terracotta is a kinder material for the planet than what plastic is. But what happens to the person that purchases that plant at Bunnings? So do they take it home and then put it into a nice ceramic pot? Do they put it straight into the ground? How do we cater for people that are living in apartments? So that's where I think we really need to put a lot more R&D into the industry in terms of coming up for an alternative to eliminate plastic, but to come up with a way of putting a plant into some type of container that's not going to harm the planet. So, yeah, there needs to be a lot more thinking on this. But, you know, the latex coir is definitely a great start.
Mm. Karen, what do you think about these different options that are available?
Look, I think it's going to be a huge change, and for nurseries to adapt, because having worked in a retail nursery myself some years ago, it's all about the look and the display. But while Bruce was just talking then, and I was thinking, you know, how would you do that? People come into the nursery, they collect, you know, choose their plants, and, you know, they might put them onto a trolley, and then perhaps the nursery owner will pack them into a box or something like that. But I was thinking about when you go to buy cut flowers, and okay, you might only buy one bunch at a time, but they're sitting in a plastic maybe an aluminium pot, and they lift out of that pot the flowers they're going to take, and the florist wraps them up. What if those types of pots were in situ or containers, so that when the supply of nursery stock comes in their coir or latex pots, they sit inside that? And just like we have to take our own bag with our grocery shopping these days, that people get used to the fact that they have to take a cardboard box or something to place them in, or the nursery owner has a supply of boxes that they can actually place them in. So there would be ways around that. I'd suggest that a lot of people would be listening to me and thinking I'm on drugs or something, but I think generally speaking, it could be adapted, and we have to do it. Something has to be done.
as long as we're dealing with the, I think, biosecurity issue, though. So if people are bringing their own pots, that's fine. But if we're sharing pots within the same nursery, I imagine that there would be problems, Bruce. What do you think?
I don't mean, sorry to butt in again. I didn't mean that they bring their own pots. What I meant was...
That would be no problem. I wouldn't have thought that because it's their pot. But if it's a nursery pot that's being reused, that might be a problem.
Like a container that they sit in. It could be, you know, so that they don't dry out from, because perhaps if it's in a coir pot, they would dry out more quickly than they would in a plastic pot. So the nursery who's selling the plant, the retailer, would have to have some sort of a setup that the coir pots sit in to prevent them from drying out a bit. And then they're taken out. Maybe they have to be disinfected. I don't know, but that's something that would have to be looked at. But I mean, plastic pots haven't always been around. They used to have terracotta pots or you bought in-ground plants. But I know things have changed and you're not going to go into a nursery these days and expect that. I mean, we still buy bare-rooted trees and roses. But, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people a lot smarter than me that would come up with a way to do it.
Well, one thing that you've got to consider, so Garden City Plastics, which is doing all of the recycling at the moment, so they're doing the shredding of the plastic pots and then they're forming them into new pots through the injection molding process. They're acting with what I'd say an equivalency of an organization that I really admire. It's called Replas. So when you take your single-use plastic bag, your soft plastics, to the REDcycle bins that are located outside of Coles and Woolies predominantly, they get melted down and then thermoformed into lots of different objects, and a lot of them are in the parks industry. So they might be bollards. They're doing hand sanitizers at the moment with COVID. There's lots of different things that they're doing with those soft plastics. So if Garden City Plastics are able to get, you know, even just say 10% of those pots that would otherwise go to landfill, then that's a fantastic thing. But one issue that we're going to have in Australia is the same issue that the Chinese have, is that our landfills are at capacity and we need to do something to reduce the size of our landfill because, you know, the reason why the whole China National Sword policy came in 2018 is because one of their landfill sites was full to capacity, I think 25 years to 50 years before its expected life expectancy came to the end. So when it closed that early, and that was the size of 100 football fields. So when it closed that early, then that's a huge issue. It means that we're using a lot more plastic now than was forecast when they originally designed that particular landfill site in China. And I think all of those issues are going to come to Australia, that our landfill sites are not going to be big enough. Yes, we can do things like harness methane from the landfills, and we will have to become cleverer about we actually reuse green energy, you know, as we deal with this plastic crisis. And that's exactly what it is. It is a plastic crisis for the planet. But we as an industry within horticulture have to think about what's going to be the best way to put a plant into a pot and then sell that to a customer. And as Karen said, it might be actually going back to our old ways. You know, I remember when I was traveling around India years ago that I'd buy something in India and it was just a newspaper folded into a bag. You know, they were recycling decades before we even considered doing recycling because of economic necessity. Mm. And at the moment, you would say people are using plastic because it's cheap. You know, plastic is incredibly cheap. And I guess there'd be lots of nurseries out there that would struggle if they weren't relying on plastic garden pots because of the cheapness. If all of a sudden they were forced to sell plants in coir or forced to sell them in terracotta, would that mean that a lot of those nurseries go under? I mean, I'm not in any way advocating that. What I'm advocating is that nurseries start to forecast what's going to happen in the future. And from my point of view, it means plastic has to get more expensive because crude oil is a commodity. So the thing that's making these plastics is going to become less and less and less. Mm. And so now is the time to start harnessing new materials and start to do that research into those new materials to figure out how we as an industry can survive. We really need to always look ahead into the future in terms of what is going to be, you know, the next thing that could actually cause an industry issue. We don't want to lose any more nurseries. We want to keep more nurseries in business, mm-hmm. because really plants are helping our planet more than anything else. You know, for all of the plastic garbage patches forming in our oceans and all the carbon being emitted into our atmosphere, it's trees that are one of those largest sequesters of that carbon and one of the big healers of the planet. And I know a lot of that's also in the ocean as well with phytoplanktons. But what we can do on Earth from a terrestrial perspective is something that the horticulture industry, the nursery industry overall, needs to embrace. We're looked upon as custodians for the planet if you're a horticulturalist or anyone at all in the nursery industry. So as the environmentalists that we all are, because that's why we're in a green space, we need to lead the way and show everyone in society this is what we can do with the materials we already have on this planet. We already have coconut trees, so hence we have coir, you know. So we have to think of other materials that we can possibly use. I mean, is there something that is an organic material that can actually last for 10 years, you know? And then if so, will that material that we come across better thing for the planet than what terracotta might be or ceramic or some other material? So ceramic is glass. So that's a mined product. So there have to be other things. But, yeah, plastic is coming to the end of its life and we've got to prepare for the end of that life.
And creating that market starts with us working on the ground.
Absolutely. And it means every horticulturalist really needs to be thinking about how we can actually get our industry to thrive, you know, in years to come. Because I believe the horticulture trade is a threatened trade. When you compare what we earn as horticulturalists compared to what a plumber might earn or an electrician might earn, it's considerably less. So in 10 years from now, will there be less horticulturalists in Australia? Or for some reason, will there be more? If climate change really does create such a horrible place for us all to live, will eventually people in power recognise that horticulturalists are the people planting the trees and caring for Mother Nature? And so we perhaps should be recognised more for those skills that we have. So if we can lead now to prepare for a future that is going to be, you know, a horrible plastic future if we don't do something about it now, and an extremely hot future with wild weather, then we really need to do what we can. And I think something small, as in starting with a latex coir pot, replacing plastic with that, well, that's going to be one step forward. And we need to keep making those steps forward if we're going to advance horticulture as an industry.
So I use grow bags on my balcony. What do you think about my grow bags? Like, are they as bad as plastic pots or?
Well, depending what it's made out of. If it's still plastic, it's just woven plastic. So look, plastic, as I say, is ubiquitous. You know, it hides in many, many faces. You know, they're even clothes. Most clothes that you wear are plastic. You know, so, and the microfibers going into the ocean, a lot of them are coming from clothes. So what people haven't realized is really how insidious plastic is. You know, it is in, as I said, it's in the air that we breathe. You know, microplastics have gotten so small that they're now in air particles. So people often don't realize that if they're in a room, probably these days, a lot of it's going to be plastic. And at some point, that plastic's going to go to landfill if you can't recycle it.
Daniel just mentioned the grow bags. There's other grow bags that have made that are kind of like felt.
Yeah, there's Hessian ones as well.
Yeah.
Why not just use a potato sack, to be honest, because it's Hessian.
Yeah.
You know, Hessian and jute are much kinder to the planet.
Yes.
You know? So that's what I'd be saying. I mean, calico, you know, is much kinder to the planet, except for the fact it's from cotton. You know, and in Australia, cotton is really an industry we shouldn't have. We don't have the water for cotton. And I would argue that a lot of the problems with the Murray-Darling River system have come from cotton. So, you know, in India, yes, you know, because India has the Ganges River system and subsequently there's water there. But India also goes through massive droughts. So is cotton going to be a material that's going to be there in our future with climate change? You know, should we now be looking at other fibres, something that's drought tolerant? And in Australia, we've got things like brachychitons, such as bottle trees and, you know, all number of brachychitons, which are drought tolerant. The fibres of brachychitons is going to potentially be something for the future that we could wear as a textile. you know, that we could have bags for growing potatoes in. We need to do research with that now, because we know that all of those plants that rely on regular rainfall and moisture in some parts of the world are going to become a rare commodity. So at the moment, what exists on the market for nursery people to embrace is latex coir pots. So I would say for the moment, use what's out there, but we still need to do research on what we could use. You know, and I think that we should be able to get funding. The Australian Packaging Covenant Organisation, APCO, was set up in response to the China National Sword Policy about its plastics. So there is going to be research available, and I know that Green Life Industry has certainly been partnering with them with regards to what it can do with polypropylene plant packaging. So what other research might be available? And maybe we need to start working with universities, you know, to actually get some grant money going as well to fund what we need to achieve. I mean, how many plastic garden pots are being consumed every year in Australia? I'm sure that we'd all be shocked to find out exactly how many plastic garden pots are consumed as new items every year and how many of them are coming from new plastic. It's interesting research, you know, that I think we need to get the stats on. How much is Garden City Plastics actually converting from old plastics to new plastics, and what new plastics need to be brought in? If the statistic is something like, say, 50%, then it means there's 50% new plastics at any one time. And as we keep growing as a population, the amount of those plastic pots are also going to keep growing. So that's why we need to just change a trend now while we can, because that plastic, if you don't live in a major urban center, is probably going to end up in landfill unless we can sort something out with how to reuse our plastics that come in for recycling.
I'm just thinking about a lot of wholesale nurseries that are automated. Do you know of any automated machinery that works with the coir pots, like en masse?
No, I don't. So I first came across the coir pots. I mean, yeah. You'd say the Jiffy pots are a coir pot, and they are. You know, and whichever the supermarkets now, I can't remember if it was Coles or Woolworths, was doing their Jiffy Pot thing, great. At least they were promoting Jiffy Pots, you know. But Jiffy also, correct me if I'm wrong, is also like a cardboard. You know, there's something else in there. It's not a pure latex pot. It's a mixed thing. So Mackay Regional Council, the Natural Environment Centre, which is called the Mackay Natural Environment Centre, they have started to use the latex coir pots, and that's where I've come across them. And they now, as a wholesale nursery, produce probably about 10% of their pots using the latex coir. I would love it if they actually used 100% latex coir, but it's a cost issue. So until more people start using the latex coir pots, they're going to be more expensive than the plastic pots that you're getting from Garden City Plastics. So as an industry, that's where I think maybe we need to regulate, you know, that if you want to become a member of NIASA or Green Life, that you have to start showing a strategy, almost like a quality plan, how you're trying to eliminate plastics from your nursery. Because really we have to, you know, if everyone in the industry said, that's it, we're not buying any more plastic pots. We're going to reuse the plastic pots we've got, and then when they're at the end of their life, that's it. No more, you know. So from now on, we're going to start using latex coir because we want the industry to only have latex coir. And let me tell you, your shopper at Bunnings, if all they can get is a plant that's in a latex coir pot, I think they'll still buy it. You know, if everyone is providing plants in latex coir pots, they have no other choice. You know, they either want that plant or they don't. And then when they get it home, they'll have to figure out exactly where they plant it to keep it alive. Are they going to put it in a terracotta pot that they've already got? Buy another terracotta pot? Great. It means that there's add-ons, you know, being sold as well as that coir pot. Maybe plastic has kept us dumb. You know, maybe that's what plastic does, you know? Really, we need to start thinking about new ways to use things. You know, I would say going back 200 years ago, we were in some ways more sustainable than what we are now. You know, when we had horse and buggy, and, you know, when we had a milk bottle, you know, and the bottle was sterilized.
That was in my lifetime.
And we're lazy. Yeah, it was in my lifetime.
And
supermarkets. And now we've become lazy.
Had,
you know, we're
paper bags.
That's
not
right.
Plastic.
That's right. So plastic's made us lazy. You know, it's dumbing us down, you know.
But people have adapted to taking their shopping bags. I must admit, a few times I've gotten to the front door of the supermarket and thought, oh, my bags, I better run back to the car. But I always keep a stack of Calico bags or reusable bags in my car. And people have adapted. So people do adapt. And you can already buy some plants at the nursery, like herbs and stuff that are in a, I think they're a Akoya type pot.
Yeah, that's right. So we are very slowly, I think, taking on these new forms of a garden pot. You know, we are very slowly adapting. But I think that if Magic Soils and, you know, other competitors that might develop in the industry start to be accepted by the industry as the way forward, then I think that that means that the industry is going to just have to say, hey, this is all we've got available. There's not going to be plastic garden pots. We're going to phase them out. So maybe what we need to say as an industry, so maybe Green Life Industry Australia, NIASA need to say, okay, by 2025, no more plastic garden pots are to be used. That's it, no more plastic garden pots. Because we've also got this thing about 2025 about plastics. We've got all these targets we've got to meet in Australia with regards to plastics. So, and this is why a lot of the state governments are now rolling out these strategies against single-use plastics, so straws and everything else, because, you know, they're trying to meet the 2025 plastic target. So I think that that's what we really need to do is say, right, you know, as of 2025, that's it. No more plastic garden pots will be available for purchase if you want to be a member of Green Life Industry Australia or if you want to be a NIASA nursery.
For those who don't know, do you want to explain what NIASA is?
So that's the accreditation process. Yeah, so it's the accreditation process for a lot of nurseries. So the Mackay Regional Council nursery is a NIASA accredited nursery. Now, obviously, NIASA should mean that you're regulated in a certain way, but they also need to be setting the standard. So does Bunnings necessarily ensure that all of those nurseries providing to them are NIASA accredited? You know, I'm not sure, but really, there needs to be leadership in the industry when it comes to garden pots. But it really needs to be, look, if you're going to keep using garden pots, then you're not doing a great thing for us as an industry. And this needs to end at some point. So there's got to be a time limit in terms of when we're going to phase them out, when we're going to get rid of them, like is happening for all the other plastics because of the harm they're doing to the planet.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess the benefits of having the legislation would be that it's going to be an even playing field. As much as, you know, I hate legislation as much as the next person, it's going to be much more difficult unless the market shifts. So we've seen the market shift as legislation, or we wouldn't call it legislation at Woolies and Coles, but I think that that was just an agreement to level the playing field there, because if one of them took away the rights to buy single-use plastic bags, a lot of people just go to the other one. So, yeah, it's a level playing field, and so everybody has adapted.
Well, you've got to ask someone to do something first, to be polite, and then when they don't do it, you've got to tell them, you know. And I think that's what's been going on with plastics. You know, I think the governments have all been scratching their heads thinking, what are we going to do with plastic? I mean, yes, we're responsible. You know, we made the economy, you know, one that was a little bit lazy and a little bit throwaway. And now how do we put this beast back in the box? You know, that's what they're all struggling to do, you know. Pandora is out of the box and well and truly flying around and getting into our oceans, but we can't contain Pandora, you know. So what do we now do? So,
Karen, what do you think about some of the, I guess, you know, new ways of making plastic and some of the new options out there? Is there any innovation in this space?
Well, I mean, just listening to what Bruce has said about the companies that he's mentioned, Magic Soils is one, and Bruce has written about this in the September issue of Hort Journal. I haven't heard of a lot, to be honest, but I mean, obviously there are. There's
recently you were telling me about a young couple made one.
Oh, yes. It's called Great Wrap. It's a plastic wrap, so sort of like Glad Wrap, but it's called Great Wrap, and it's made from potato skins. So,
wow,
you know, it's broken down and what is it called? Made into, like, they use the starches from it to recycle it. But they're actually they're producing it in Australia. They're in Victoria, and their factory in Victoria is all renewable energy as well. And they're going to be doing plastic wrap with it as well. Pallet wrap with it as well. So, and looking at the commercial space. So, yes, there are a lot of young, very clever people out there who are concerned about the environment. You know, this couple that have started it, one, the lady's an architect and she was always looking for natural products to use in her designs, and the fellows worked in a vineyard making wines, and, you know, a lot of the cartons of wine are wrapped in plastic, pallet wrapped. So it concerned them because they're surfers as well and they're in the ocean a lot, so they could see the effects of the plastics in the water as well. So, sorry, when you asked that question, Daniel, I thought you were referring to pots.
Well, I mean the plastic in general. So, you know, plastic's great. I love plastic. You know, it's beautiful, especially single-use plastic. Like, I would love to have a single-use plastic alternative. And, you know, you can talk about potato peels, you know, in, you know, making chips and stuff like that. That is literally, otherwise it's going to get, they're probably not turning it into compost. They're probably putting it into landfill if you don't turn it into plastic. So, you know, I'd love to see some innovation so we don't have to give up plastic because it's awesome.
Yes, well, this great wrap, you can actually put it into your compost or even your worm farm. So it will break down. And I think it has a shelf, it has a limited shelf life. I can't recall exactly how long. But, I mean, I'm thinking even of some hanging baskets that I've got on my own property, one I redid the other day because I figure the plant has been in there for about 10 years. So, you know, that's a fibrous lined wire basket and that's lasted all those years. So, you know, they can still have a reasonable shelf life. So, you know.
Something interesting that's going on in Queensland at the moment. So 1st of September, we've got a single-use plastic ban coming in, and it's going to affect a lot of people in catering supplies in particular. So as an example, plastic straws will hopefully come to an end in Queensland 1st September. So everyone's now getting onto the market with new things. You know, so there's, of course, your stainless steel straw, you know, that's going to replace your plastic straw. There's bagasse, you know, from sugarcane that's going to be used for like your hamburger boxes. So why can't we use bagasse, you know, instead of plastic garden pots? So, you know, if we're going to grow sugarcane, and I'm in the Sugar City, I'm in Mackay, now why can't we, you know, put some research and innovation into coming up with new garden pots using sugarcane? I mean, unfortunately, most of the sugarcane here, or fortunately, actually goes back in as energy, you know, to the sugarcane refineries. But can we grow other things that aren't going to consume so much water? You know, because obviously sugarcane does take a fair bit of water. But is there something we can grow, like I was talking about before with brachychitons, you know, where we can get a new material and then use that? Because I think the potato starches are fantastic. And there's been a lot of research into seaweed as well, obviously to reduce methane in cows. But, you know, we need to do more research. I mean, University of Queensland has been leading the way with some of the research in food preservatives with what I would call bush foods. So do we need to, as I say, go to the universities and say, this is what we're wanting in the industry, and Green Life is going to sponsor that or going to somehow pay for it out of one of their special grants to come up with new ways to package plants, new ways to actually have a plant grow? I mean, can you just get a plant, put it in a little bit of media? Can we use recycled glass as an example? Because I know we can. You know, we're trying to think here at Mackay Regional Council of ways to use our recycled glass. And one thing I'm wanting to do more research with is using recycled glass as a growing media to replace things like perlite and vermiculite. The issue that we've got at the moment is that it's too sharp, you know, so we need to get it tumbled. And when it's tumbled, can it replace perlite? Can it replace vermiculite? Can the industry then have a different growing media? And if we could somehow come up with something that's preservative that you just spray that media with and the plant grows in that, almost as though, what would an example be? Would be like syrup or something like that that hardens. Do we actually need a pot? You know, do we just need something that's going to preserve it?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing, isn't it? Because thinking of the little seed pots, you know, like you said, the supermarkets were giving away, once they get wet, they start to break down, which is, you know, a few weeks, and they're meant to be planted straight into the ground then, or into a pot. So you do need something that's going to hold it in its place for a while. But look, you know, as with the people that bought out that new great wrap, someone will come up with something. It's just a matter of encouragement, a bit of encouragement and funding to the universities to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and really, I think the consumers will buy what's available. No, that's what they do. You know, they'll buy what they have to buy.
I think a lot of people who buy plants are people who love the environment. Let's face it, you know, they're not the type that will, you know, want to go and buy a plastic plant. They want to buy a real plant because they are concerned. And a lot of young people that I speak with regularly are concerned about the environment and want to see change.
Yeah, Australia could lead the way. You know, we need to lead the way in this industry because, you know, we're an island, you know. So really we should be saying to the rest of the world, hey, this is what we're going to do with all of these things that would otherwise go to landfill. We're going to figure out new uses for them. You know, and the industry that we're going to use as our litmus test is the horticulture industry because we want to connect these things back to the environment. And that's something I always do as an educator in the waste area is to let young people know that, you know, there is a definite correlation between our environment and our waste. And if you can improve one of them, you shall hopefully improve the other. So, yeah, why not? Why not lead the world in terms of recycling and innovating? You know, when it comes to our recycled material.
Because it doesn't just affect our country either. The waste that gets dumped into the ocean floats off to all those people living on the Pacific Islands and they're copping everyone's rubbish, you know. I've been in some places where particularly after storms, and the amount of plastic that washes up is horrendous. And you think it's not even their own waste. It's just floating up there, you know.
Yeah, I mean, decades ago when I was backpacking around the Middle East, I went to a place called Dahab in Egypt and I was snorkeling in plastic, you know, and I'm talking 2 decades ago. And this is the same timeline when we were talking about, well, what was then the greenhouse effect, you know, global warming.
Yeah.
So we've been talking about plastic, you know, for as long as we've been talking about the greenhouse effect, climate change, whatever the term is, you know. So we've been talking about our worth, you know, getting hotter and hotter and hotter for quite a long time. But where's the action on it?
No action. You need leadership. We need Bruce Thompson for the Minister for the Environment.
No, I don't think so. But, you know, I mean, maybe we do need a benign dictator, which I'd be very good at that. But we do need legislation to say if you ask someone to do it and they don't do it, then you've got to make them do it, you know. So, and that's, I think, what's happening to the world right now. Market forces are currently determining what's going to go on with our waste because we can't send it to China anymore. Yeah. So we've got to figure out what are we going to do with all this stuff that was going to China. You know, we have to use it. Yeah. We have to somehow figure out a way to use it in everything that we do.
We shouldn't have been sending it there in the first place. You know.
No, that's right. But it was a short-term solution. And it was an easy solution and an economic solution, you know. But, you know, eventually when all the oil has been sucked out of the earth, they won't be able to use plastic anymore, you know. So they've got to start thinking ahead.
So I guess in the meantime, until we have legislation change, if and when, I guess we can sort of take matters into our own hands. So I suppose two problems I see are education and access to good depots to offload that plastic. So maybe we can put some energy into that. But also I think that becoming associated with recycling is really good business sense for a brand. It, you know, you can sort of separate yourself from the market.
Oh, look, I'm thinking before when we were talking, I was thinking how you could have a really unique retail nursery that was boutique, that was completely sustainable. Imagine it. Wouldn't that be a change, you know?
Absolutely. You know, if you got your plants, Karen, and you put them in, you know, glass recyclate, okay, so if you grew them in glass recyclate, if you dipped it in cornstarch, you got that cornstarch to harden, I'm sure you could make a fortune for those plants because you are going to have a ready market for them and they're going to be people that are very environmentally keyed in and I think they will pay. That's right. That's exactly right.
When you see how much money people are paying online for some variegated plants, you know, there's definitely a market for it. And I mean, I'd love to see it, but you know, we've got to talk about it more. And your article in the magazine, which will be out in the September issue, which is in the September issue, I should say, will certainly make people sit up and take notice, I'm sure. It's a fabulous article.
Thank you. Yeah. People just need to start thinking differently, you know, about things that we've been doing that have been harming the planet. You know, if you see as I see, so I'm also a bush regenerator. And here in Mackay, our mangroves are essential, you know, to the Great Barrier Reef. It's the filter for the Great Barrier Reef. And, you know, when I'm working as a bush regenerator and I come across plastics in the mangroves, I think, where is that going to end up? And I almost race to it, you know, and I take them out from the mangroves. But how many plastic items am I not seeing, you know? And, you know, I'm currently involved in the Great Northern Cleanup, organising that for Mackay. And, you know, I'm trying to get traction with the local community, get more involved, because really people don't understand that how horrible these great big garbage patches in our Pacific Ocean are. And they're all coming from somewhere. You know, one of them's around Japan, another one's between Hawaii and California. But how much plastic's going from Australia to these garbage patches? And what's it killing along the way? You know, and that's the terrifying thing, is it's going to eventually kill us. No, because there's going to be microplastics in our human biology, you know, and I imagine they're going to at some point amass and cause all manner of health issues. So, you know, because they don't break down in the sea, so why are they going to break down in our body of water that's a human being?
Yeah, that's for sure.
And even tattoos contain plastic in them. Yeah, every time I see someone with a tattoo, I'm thinking, oh, you've got plastic on your body, you know. Right, so even tattoos have plastics in them. God. So very different from a tattoo 100 years ago. So as I said, plastic's an insidious thing. Mm. It's in everything. So, you know, to me, it's always been a very strange thing to understand that you've got plant, which is a natural thing, growing in plastic, you know, and that's what nurseries are providing, a natural thing growing in plastic. That's why I think we need to set the standard and change that. Because it's really a diametrically opposed paradigm of a living thing growing in plastic. So, yeah, we need to set the standard.
Bruce, I just wanted to ask you one other question. Usually at the end of an episode, I like to ask guests, what else would you like the listeners to know about? But I think we've kind of covered a lot of, I think, what you wanted the listeners to know about. But can you tell us about some of the other articles that you think are important that you've written for the Hort Journal?
Where I came across Karen, or where she came across me, I was working at Indigigrow in Sydney, and prior to that I was at National Trust of Australia. So I've always been linked into the environment. But when I came over to Indigigrow, it was really to set up the Indigigrow nursery system, and I used bush plants and medicinal plants as the thing that was going to be our unique selling point, I guess. And it was because I was working with Indigenous Australians that I really wanted to be a part of that reconnection of people to cultural importance. So a lot of the bush foods are really sacred things. And the medicinal plants, it's sacred knowledge. And even though I'm not Indigenous, I guess in the spirit of reconciliation, I wanted to ensure that the knowledge that I had was equally shared, you know, and that everybody could benefit from that knowledge. And it was really a wonderful knowledge exchange. I'd be there with elders from the La Perouse Indigenous Darawal community, Bidjigal community, and I'd be learning from them just as they'd be learning from me. And I think that that's a really important thing for Australia's sustainability, is to figure out how we can use our bush foods to actually reduce the water requirements that we have for our exotic plants. As I said, why have we got cotton in Australia? Why have we got rice in Australia? There is actually a native rice, you know, that grows in the Northern Territory and Northern Western Australia. Why aren't we eating that? You know, that's what we should be eating. I mean, years and years and years ago, for tens of thousands of years, Nardoo, you know, Marsilia was actually being farmed, you know, and we were eating that, you know, as Australians. The First Nations people were eating that. Why aren't we eating that now? You know, the work by Bruce Pascoe on, you know, Themida, so eating kangaroo grass, you know, why aren't we doing that? So in terms of our sustainability, I think we need to be looking at food waste. I mean, most people don't know, but food waste is about 46% of your general waste bin at home. So we really need to start doing more research in terms of how to reduce food waste, you know. So, yeah, they're things to think about.
You know, Bruce, a recent thing I've seen is, I'm sorry, it is a plastic bucket, but poke a few holes in it and put your waste in it and then just shake it up every now and then until it gets too heavy, and then just get a new bucket and fill that up, and then you might have two or three on the go, and sort of, you know, you're going to have a sequence of one that's older, you use that, and then that becomes the empty one again. What do you reckon about that? That's easy for someone on a balcony to do that.
So, I mean,
yes.
I mean, this is, as sadly, you've fallen into that plastic well, you know, where...
Yeah. But what else is there?
You know, I mean, bamboo.
Okay, bamboo. Now we're talking.
Why can't we make bamboo watertight?
You know, great.
I'm sure bamboo is watertight to a certain extent. But we've got a lot of plants in Australia that we could use, you know, that are going to be watertight. And that's what we need to start doing research with. You know, we need to come up with an alternative. But it's all about our sustainability. And I would say that I've moved from horticulture into sustainability, and that includes waste. It's looking at bush foods, at medicinal plants. I mean, we've got entire industries of medicinal plants in Australia that we're not harnessing. I mean, it's like the story of the macadamia. We had the opportunity to actually have an amazing, you know, macadamia industry in the 1800s, and we didn't do anything with it. You know, we failed with what we're trying to do because we probably didn't undertake that correctly. And then the Americans took our macadamias, you know, so Hawaii is now the place for macadamias. Well, how many other bush foods are we going to lose? I mean, another one of them, Solanum avicularae, kangaroo apple, is being used by pharmaceutical industries in Russia and China. Why aren't we using that? You know, these are jobs for Australians. Why are we allowing our special plant knowledge to be taken by other countries? Wonderful to share, but we need to look after our own backyard first. You know, I think that, everyone in Australia, you know, regardless of your cultural heritage, we need to think about the future of Australia. You know, we need to, I think, you know, work as one people. Anyone who really wants to take a plan on and study it, you know, should be given, you know, research money, I think, you know, to figure out exactly what chemicals are in our plants and how can they benefit us. You know, there are plants in our rainforest that are being investigated for cancer research. Why is it that only a very, very small number of people know about those plants? I mean, you know, when we go to the Olympic Games, as an example, and we're all celebrating our sporting prowess, why aren't we celebrating our intellectual prowess in terms of what we do with our magnificent ancient plants?
Yeah, who knows why we don't. Thank you very much, Bruce, for your input today. It's very educational, and I'm sure, as I said before, it'll make a lot of people sit up and take notice, and, well, I hope it does, and we will certainly be keen to talk to you again and look forward to continued articles of yours in Hort Journal. They're always very well received, so thanks again.
Thank you both for interviewing me and for listening to my diatribe, I think.
Well, it's an important diatribe, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think that we do need to think, you know, very long and hard about our sustainability, you know, in terms of everything that we do. You know, we need to embrace our past as a nation, and we also need to, at the same time, work towards our future, you know, and we all have to work together for that future to ensure that our planet and our direct backyard is going to be a highly sustainable place for future generations to live in. You know, there's that old saying about, you know, the great deed of planting a tree knowing you will never enjoy its shade. Well, we need to take that type of thinking and, I guess, blow it up a million times in terms of everything we do on this planet. It's not just about planting a tree. It's about, you know, considering what we're doing with plastics. It's about considering how we all work together functionally, you know, as Australians, you know, and as people on the planet. And I think that when someone's benefiting from the manufacturing of plastic and someone is dying because of plastic, and that's certainly the case when you consider that a lot of plastics are being burnt, places like Indonesia and India, and are creating dioxins that go into the atmosphere that then go down into our food chain. Plastic is killing people already. So we need to think about how can we, in horticulture in particular, make the world a better place by thinking now about a new future for everybody. You know? And that means, to me, putting a natural thing, a growing plant, into something else that's not harming the planet.
Well said.
Check the show notes or Google Hort Journal Australia to subscribe to the magazine, so you can read the work of professionals working in the space, just like Bruce. Follow and subscribe to the Plants Grow Here podcast for new episodes every Sunday arvo. We like to create content for professionals working with plants while keeping it approachable for passionate home gardeners that are ready for industry-level knowledge.